Hello and welcome back to another episode of IndyCar Weekly. I am Nathan Brown, Motorsports Insider with the Indianapolis Star, joined as always by the driver of the number 45 Hy-Vee Honda with Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing, Jack Harvey. We've got a great episode for you guys here this week. No, we haven't been with you for a little while. Sometimes schedules just get a little tough to sync up. Being a racing driver certainly takes a lot of time. Being a member of the media covering it takes a lot of time. And frankly, with my new addition to the world 4 months ago, my wife and I's new baby boy, life has been new and wild and busy, and honestly just kind of been taking everything day by day. But we're back this week here to preview the IndyCar race at Barber on Sunday. We've got a lot to talk about in the first three races of the IndyCar season, so a lot to dive into, and Jack and I are I think going to try and make a point to be able to ramp this back up and have a lot of great episodes, great content, some good guests here for all the listeners out there. So we appreciate you guys sticking with us and hope that you continue to tune in and follow along as we chart through this 2022 IndyCar season. Jack, I know it's been a little while since we taped. I know a lot has happened, but it's feeling quite a lot closer to, I know, closer to May more than anything. I feel like these last couple weeks, it feels like the 500 is right around the corner, and yet we've still got two races before we get there. How are you doing?
Doing well, mate. Definitely seems a little odd to me that there's a race in May that isn't at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I don't know if anyone else is feeling that. And I absolutely love Barber. It just seems a little unusual, you know, that we're actually racing there in May. But honestly, I think we're looking forward to this weekend quite a lot. Fair to say the season hasn't gotten off to the start that we were hoping it might have. That being said, as always, good optimism, good positivity around the team that we can have a great weekend this weekend coming in Barber. But obviously it has been a second since we last recorded, and you know, like you said, schedules this time of year can just be you know, a little unpredictable. They change kind of a lot, and you know, for transparency as well, you know, when the season hasn't gotten off the way you want, you spend more time with the team trying to figure it out. So yeah, it's been a little bit tough, but I think we're back on the straight and narrow again, and I think we've got some. I chatted to a couple of people already this week, trying to maybe fill in when we can't be here or just have additional guests. So definitely excited for the way the next few months might go.
Yeah, you mentioned the idea of having Barber in May. I can't remember. I know it was at least one, if not two, of the races last year at Texas Motor Speedway, I think, were also in May. It is very weird. I know, I guess you don't want, like, you know, you don't want too long of a gap before you build into everything that surrounds the month of May at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And it's just kind of been weird how those weekends have fallen these last couple of years, with May 1st and May 2nd being, you know, Saturdays and Sundays and what have you. But I agree, yeah, when you are starting off your month of May in Alabama, does feel a bit off. And for me, I mean, it's pretty similar to you. For you, this kicks off, I think, a series of six straight weekends while I'll be at racetracks, starting with this next one. I'll be at the Formula One race in Miami the weekend following. And then we've got three weekends. Yeah. Doing a little bit of work off the beaten path of my normal job, but and then, you know, we've got three straight weekends at IMS. We've got Detroit following and Road America right afterwards. So it's going to be a really busy, time in the sport, and we get to take a nice little breather before Mid-Ohio, and then the series just, like, takes off at a breakneck speed before We get into that closing stretch, but we'll get too far ahead of ourselves. You mentioned, there's been a lot to digest, both maybe on a personal level and a team level, over these first three races in your new home at Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing. I know from a results standpoint, it hasn't necessarily brought everything you might have wanted, but you're in a big picture, long runway mindset. Take us, through in what you can. Have there been any overarching themes that you've seen or you've had in your first three races in this new home that either were similar to or different than what you might have expected?
Honestly, I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most is just being a part of the team. I really enjoy working with Graham and Christian, and there's so many good engineers in the team. I think the season hasn't gone the way that even they were hoping it would have. Certainly, I think in the driver department, there was a lot of optimism, in bringing me and Christian into the team and, how we might help that. And what's been tough this year, and it's not an excuse, certainly not trying to use it as one, but, we did one day of testing before we went to St. Pete, which isn't a lot. And then, go to St. Pete, and I thought we had some, actually really good pace there. We just, not a great weekend with our crashing practice and then, getting blocked in qualifying, but recovered to a decent result. Obviously, Texas was what Texas was, and then heading to Long Beach, it just wasn't a very good performance. I mean, I think the car in general has quite a lot of understeer. We just can't seem to get the front to comply a little bit better. That's certainly what we need to work on, and that's what we're trying to figure out now as well. And I think the team is very used to working in a certain way, a little bit different than what I'm used to, in terms of like setup change and stuff. So then I think it's just honestly trying to fit in together well. So I need to keep doing a good job in communicating specifically what I need from the car, and really try and help lead, what changes I think are going to be required. And then obviously having trust and faith in the team that they're going to be able to give them to me, because, we certainly made the transition to RLL to try and compete for wins a little bit more consistently, and that's still the goal. I think we may have to look at, how we're going to get there and what the time frame is, for that. I'm really enjoying my time, and the thing that has been nice, I was talking to Bobby Rahal last week, Mike Lanigan, and they also see that we're not where they thought we would be either, and took some, trying to basically just make sure that we all stay confident and positive, because no one wants to be where we are. Work's been done across the board, but really, really appreciate from the team stance is their willingness to really work through it. There's no finger pointing. Ultimately, we are a team and we're going to work through it as one. But certainly feel the support of the whole team, like right behind us. We just got to find, some of those setup changes that work well for me. And I think it was nice to finally get some few test days like we did at Indy last week, and I thought the test went okay. Nothing to jump up and down about in a we were flying, but also nothing to be super duper concerned about as if we were slow, so kind of in the middle of the pack, I thought. But again, it's not where we want to be, so we're just going to keep working. And the more time that we can spend working together, just trying to move forward, harmoniously and do it with conviction and confidence, I think we're going to be fine, and we'll keep working until we are, because the goals coming here were to compete for wins, and certainly we weren't there the first three weekends, but nothing to stop us doing it come Barber if we make good setup changes and we unload with a good car, and obviously that I drive well as well. So lots of thoughts, lots of things, but ultimately, as I try, and I don't think anyone should, we're only three races in, it's a big off-season change. The tires are a bit different this year and things like that. So if we have a good next three races, then it's balanced out. So I think that the atmosphere within the team is a very good one. We just need to keep working hard, and you know, now's the time to double down on everything and dig deep and rise to the occasion and rise to the challenge.
You mentioned learning how you can communicate what you want on the car with this new team that you have around you, and just the new larger infrastructure that RLL has in place. And I started to wonder, I know that you ran six races last year with Elio at times when Meyer Shank Racing was a two-car team, but largely, for the bulk of that season, and then obviously for your IndyCar 10-year before that with MSR, you were a one-car team where the whole program was just kind of centered around you as a one-car entity and you solely as a driver. And I'd be curious, when you're stepping into a new team, like, have you noticed any changes just in, how you have to communicate or how you have to think about things when you're working on a pretty robust three-car full-time operation at RLO?
It's a tough one to answer. Because it depends how you look at it. And I think everyone's approach to this could be different. But although last year, the team ran as an independent team, all the debriefs, all the pre-event meetings were shared with Andretti. So I had teammates last year that I worked with. So working with new people, isn't a new thing. And I think that's where, perhaps there's a little bit of a misconception that, the teams they're connected. They're ran independently to some degree, but they're connected, So I think that partnership is a bit stronger. So having teammates this year was easy for me because I feel like I've had teammates the whole time I've been in IndyCar, even back when we were at SPM, we had two teammates there. Both years, and I feel like I've always operated well in a team environment. I think what's been nice, just for me anyway, is to be very much involved in the team, not through association or anything like that, but because they wanted us there and they brought us there. So I've really enjoyed feeling a little bit more of a slightly bigger presence, if you want to call it that, in the actual engineering room. I've really enjoyed that. And at this point, really, it's just time together. And that's what we need, is more time spent together, working together, understanding each other's language, and also our references, but also severity of our problems. And I think that's what time will continue to give us. And, obviously we hope that we would unload with a little bit of a faster baseline car, a couple of events that wasn't the case. You don't necessarily just say it's fine, because obviously we're working on it to make sure that that doesn't happen. But how we move forward is obviously going to be really important. And that's where we are putting our effort and our work now, because obviously the team has very much not just revolved around Graham, but obviously he's been the one developing the car. And now I'm trying to learn, how he drives the car, but also what I need from it as an individual. And then just trying to balance how those things can all fit together. Because what's nice is that everyone drives a similar car, as you're able to really move the program forward. However, if that car isn't working for me, we still want to get results. And if we can get good results, but it's just a different car, then so be it. That's just kind of the nature of competing, right? Not the same thing doesn't work for everybody. But I really like working with Graham and Christian and, everyone on the 15, the 30, the 45. It's an incredible group of people. And I think as a team, we're gonna figure it out. And I think because of that, feel even more united and together. So I'm just excited for what we do.
I was looking over, kind of where things stand in terms of these, top drivers that, make up these standings, and probably two of the less or the you know the more unchanged teams in terms of drivers and probably in some ways engineers from this offseason were of course Team Penske and Chip Ganassi Racing. You've got Ganassi adding Jimmy as a full-time driver, but he drove the majority of the races last year on road and street courses last year. I think they had maybe a very minor engineering, an engineer shakeup or strategy shakeup among the team, but pretty unchanged. And Team Penske goes from four full-time cars to three, and you've got some minor engineering changes in the background there. But I, with how close the series is in terms of driver talent, and how close these cars are, how long these cars have been around, I almost started to wonder, as you mentioned, we are only through three races. There's no reason to have any sort of overreaction on where the direction of some guys that are maybe not quite where they want to be are, like you maybe for example, in terms of the point standings. But I almost wonder if maybe how some of these first couple of races have shook out this year has something to do, when you look at your top four, that's Joseph Scott, Alex Palou, Will Power. I think Dixon might be fifth. He's got to be close if he's not fifth. If that just has anything to do with when you factor in the fact that we've only got, one day of testing before we come into a season, that perhaps it's just that much easier for someone, a program that hasn't had any changes in the off season to just get the ball rolling really quickly, rather than someone like you and a team like RLL that has just had a handful of things that you guys are adapting to on the driver and engineering side that very well, probably will start to get ironed out and see you guys more often at the front like we expect to, but maybe that has something to do with how the start has shaken out. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Oh, I mean, I think it's completely fair to say that continuity of people, and teams and things like that is massive. I mean, that was very much a reason to stay where we were, and quite a big factor in a decision, in all fairness. So I don't think it's a surprise to see the teams that have had, the chance to build and to grow over an off season with immediate ways to work together and how to improve, can perform well. I mean, I think one of the best examples, and I love the guy, I think he's awesome, is Scotty McLaughlin. With off season under his belt, coming back, same team, granted new engineer, but still in the same team. And he's kicking ass. You can't say he's not. And also, if you look at how all of our seasons have progressed up to that point before making the change, every year we looked like we were getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And I think that's because of people and building relationship with people and things like that. And I didn't come to RLL on a 1 year deal. This very much also has a bigger picture attitude in mind. And Rome wasn't built in a day. That being said, it would be nice to, find some speed pretty quickly here, obviously, because we all have our desires to win, and that's what we think we can achieve together. But I mean, to actually answer your question, no, I'm not surprised to see those people at the front. I also just not surprised to see the actual people you mentioned at the front, because they're all great drivers. So yeah, I mean, IndyCar right now is incredibly competitive. And as I mentioned, it takes time, but I do believe that together with everybody at RLL, we will come out of this strong and achieving the results that we want to, which is, really what the pull to go there was. So not a surprise, but I'm also optimistic that we're going to get there sooner rather than later.
I know we've got some questions on this, so we can maybe just touch on it briefly here and then dive in later on in the episode. We get some more pointed questions, but just from a larger scale, maybe big picture idea, and I know that you can only share so much. don't want to give too many inside secrets away, but when I know, even from talking to Graham at the test, the Indy 500 test this past week, just kind of in the bullpen going over the start of his season as well. I know he's been kind of somewhat similarly frustrated knowing that all the pieces are there, but you know, there's been some things missing. I know some of it has come from just ending up in tough spots from qualifying, and then you can only, you know, you can really only do so much. I know you, I mean, you charged, I think you gained what, like maybe three places at St. Pete and four or five or six at Long Beach. So you yourself and I think Graham probably similarly were doing a lot of charging and picking guys off during the race. But when you look at qualifying, I know that's something that you came into this team as a known asset in that department. When you guys have analyzed things over these first three races, has there been any have you guys been able to at least identify maybe a through line in some of your guys' shortcomings there that you guys hope to maybe have figured out once we head to Barber this weekend?
I think so. You know, I think if you look at our balance, you know, or imbalance that we have right now, it's just there's a lot of understeer in the car. And I think that's really holding us back to being able to piece together a good corner, as in, you know, we can break as late as some of the other guys, but then we can't roll through the corner as well, or we can roll through the corner as well, but then we have to, you know, break too early. So, you know, I think we're very aware of where our problem is, obviously how we fix those problems, completely different story. And that's what we're spending so much time trying to understand. But certainly, I mean, Long Beach, in some areas, we're a little confused as to why we were lacking pace in the way we were. But in terms of the sheer balance of the car, no, I don't think it's a mystery right now or something that we just really don't understand. It's more how we're going to fix it is more the conversation that we've been having. And you know, that's down to us as driver and team and engineers to try and figure out. And you know, although me, Graham and Christian all do have slightly different driving styles, I think our complaints of the car have all been very, very consistent, very similar. So although we may need subtly different things, the actual baseline of the car and what we feel as soon as we get out and get going has been super similar. And that is a great thing to have, because now as a team we should be able to split up testing work and then collectively move forward. So we go out and we try something and we really like it and it looks like and we're fast, then it should be the sort of thing that hopefully Graham and Christian can add to their car, or vice versa. And ultimately, that's what having, we hope, three good drivers gives you, right? You know, and I've been a part of big teams before where that works really well. You know, because even Penske, although they've downscaled a bit, you know, from four to three, they still have three incredible drivers who are able to work through sets of changes and things like that. And that is the primary reason for really expanding, is to be able to cover more setup changes, you know, setup philosophies and things like that, and then ultimately at some point that we can come back together and try and you know, put the maximum together, which obviously we hope is for qualified in the race. I think one thing I could do to improve a bit more where we are is, you know, going into Long Beach as an example, I'm not sure I thought we quite had the pace to transfer, and that just didn't sit well with me. So, you know, we tried something pretty big going into qualifying, which I don't normally like to do that. But, you know, if I don't feel confident that we can transfer, then really at that point, we really do have to try something. And I think looking back, that was the wrong thing. I think we would have gained more just from consolidating the car, you know, really try and maximize driving and just go from there. So, I mean, I think there's definitely been bits to learn and that we could do to improve for sure. And again, that's been a lot of the conversation is, you know, in some parts of the weekend, it's, you know, it's great to keep trying things, but, you know, if it's not going to contribute in a positive way, then, you know, better the devil you know sort of situation. So it's been an interesting start to the year. It's definitely had a few head scratching moments, but we're here now. We're going to give it our best shot and we'll just keep cracking on.
When we look at this season, you know, from the all 26 full-time cars, I'm curious to get your take on this, and I can give mine. I always feel like it feels like a good point to maybe kind of, now that we've got, you know, not just one or not just two, but three races under our belts, kind of take stock in maybe, you know, maybe any surprises or maybe somewhat disappointments to start the year off, just kind of in terms of how this thing is shaken out. I will say, given how they started last year, I don't know that I would have expected Team Penske to win each of these first three races. I think that's been a pretty incredible start to have all three of their drivers in the top four of the standings is pretty strong. Maybe a biggest surprise out of that. I might even say the one driver out of those three at Team Penske that hasn't won a race yet, Will Power, I think you could argue maybe am more impressed with how he has started this year as consistently as he has been than anyone. He's the only driver in the entire IndyCar series that has had a top four finish in each of these first three races. His teammates have, you know, both won or finished second four of their six finishes, but have also had finishes outside the top 10. So he's been incredibly consistent. It was also an interesting factoid that despite not winning a race, that Alex Palou actually has, I think, three more points at this point in the season than he did last year through three races when he won the first race. Just shows, you know, how incredibly consistent he's been. I think the NBC broadcast mentioned last, or I guess a couple weekends ago after Long Beach, that he'd registered, I think, 10 podium finishes in his first 19 races at Chip Ganassi Racing, which is a pretty credible feat, I would have to say. In terms of maybe surprises for some of the wrong reasons, I would say I thought that Andretti Autosport might, you know, at least from one of their three truly experienced drivers, might have been able to mount a little bit better charge to start the year. I know this, you know, as we mentioned, we're still young in this season, and Colton Herta looked like he was going to have a really strong finish at Long Beach until he lost it into the wall midway through that race after starting on pole, and they had a handful of issues at both Long Beach and St. Pete, just a four car team that I know we expect a lot out of, and I'm sure they'll find their groove, but in some ways haven't had a great amount of luck to start this season, and also have not maybe executed maybe as cleanly as we might be used to. They have Colton Herta in 11th, Alexander Rossi in 18th, and Romain Grosjean in 6th, in the top five as we know it right now. Joseph first, Scott second, Alex third, Will fourth, and Scott Dixon in 5th, despite just one top five for Dixon. That would be someone I'd keep an eye on as we head into Barber. He's I think finished in the top 10 in all of the races that we run at Barber, but amazingly has never won this race. I think along with St. Pete, one of just the couple tracks that he's run on for the bulk of his IndyCar career, and still has not been able to figure out a way to win there. So any performances through these first three races that stand out to you, either in positive or negative terms?
For sure. I think Scotty McLaughlin, you know, his season, I know he, you know, wasn't happy with what happened in Long Beach, but I mean, he's still having an incredible start to the season. And, you know, if anyone was a racing fan and you look at his CV, I mean, you know, he's an incredible driver. And I guess it's like that, always that one. It's like, it's really impressive, and you know, you're kind of surprised, but you shouldn't be surprised that someone of his caliber is having a great season. To be honest with you, in terms of speed, I think Team Penske, you know, Chip Ganassi Racing and Andretti Autosport have all been very fast, you know, no doubt about it. And it's not surprising. It's just more that the consistency they've had and been quick at all of the first three has been obviously very impressive. I tell you, a guy I feel like should have a mention because he's had some great qualifying performances and whatnot is Felix Rosenqvist. You know, I feel like there's so much talk in the off season, and you know, you don't know how much of it is true or not. You just, you know, obviously, like a lot of people, I see what I read. You know, so I'm happy that he's getting some, you know, better performances going. I know he wasn't happy with what happened in Long Beach with his tire deg, but you know, pole at Texas, and then you know, follow that up with a good qualifying in Long Beach. So, a guy that I'm just happy to see doing well. You know, not to, you know, keep banging on about it. I am surprised, actually, our lack of speed across the first three races. You know, but I think that's probably not a shocker. And, you know, I think there's, at this moment of the season, you've got three groups of people, really. You've got people who are happy how it started. You've got people in the middle who are looking for build. And then you've got people toward the back who are hoping they're going to get their season back on track. You know, and sadly, we've probably fallen in the latter of that category. But when I think about it, and heading sort of towards Barber, Joseph's had a super impressive start to the year because for whatever reason, I feel like his seasons get, throughout the year, he gets stronger and stronger and stronger, you know, and he's come out swinging big. And I would like to say congratulations to him and his wife, Ashley, because they've just had a baby boy, you know, and that's awesome. And happy to see, you know, the way that life is treating him. But he's very good at Barber. You know, I've seen Joseph do some really great things there. You know, and I guess some of these people, you know, last year, like Will Power, who wasn't having, you know, too much luck, is having a great start to the season. And, you know, when you give good drivers like that a great start to the year, it can be pretty hard to overcome that. So I think from our side, we, you know, we just want to get in the mix more, you know, so that we can challenge these people. But, you know, as you read out the top five, I don't think there was anything surprising really about it. I think that's what's so cool about IndyCar racing right now. The top 10, you know, can be super competitive, you know, and hard to predict. So I think there's a lot of really good drivers in the series right now, a lot of really good teams. It's just going to come down to, you know, how we maximize the weekends. But I would say that's my general assessment of the series in the first three races.
I think you're spot on Joseph, and I think I touched on it coming out of Long Beach when I was doing a story on him and his weekend and maybe just kind of what we might be able to expect looking ahead. He's, you know, when you look at his seasons in the past, the one time he did actually have two really early victories actually came in 2018 when he, you know, started with a win at Phoenix and a win at Barber. And then, you know, I wouldn't say fell off necessarily for the end of, you know, toward the end of the year, but didn't maybe keep up that same competitive pace. And it's a season where Scott Dixon came away with the championship and Joseph actually ended up fifth with a pretty crowded group up near the top. But everywhere else, you know, you look, you see he's typically pretty good for one race ahead of the 500. And then, you know, he'll typically get at minimum one more, likely two, sometimes maybe even three in those years when he's having his dominant championship performances like he did in 2017 and 2019. So when you look at the fact he's already got two up his belt right now, Barber, as you mentioned, is an incredible track for him. He's won there three times, three actually in the span of 4 years from 2015 to 2018. A couple years back, and I think was, to if my recollection serves me right, was practicing and qualifying pretty well there a year ago before things went off the rails on lap one. But You've got that. You've got the IMS Road Course that he's won on, I think once back in 2020, and I think has started to have better results at in years past. And we all know that Team Penske is always really strong on the IMS Road Course, and then the 500 that he's been looking and waiting for his entire career. I think he's had whatever it is, 9 or 10 starts at the 500, hasn't been able to win that yet. I know that win would mean a lot to him. So you start to wonder, does he pick up another win in these next 3 races? And if he does, he's starting to be a really incredibly tough guy to catch in the championship standings, unless his teammate Scott McLaughlin is finishing second right behind him to keep this thing close. So I think that'll be a storyline to continue to follow, very well. Maybe Joseph doesn't win any of these next 3 races and someone else catches fire, and all of a sudden we've got a third driver at the top of the point standings, and it's really truly wide open heading past the 500. We'll have to see. But I think you are right. A Joseph Newgarden that's hitting on all cylinders doesn't too often lose steam as we get into the latter portion of the schedule that has some tracks like Iowa, for example, Gateway, that he's had a lot of success on and won a handful of races on in the last couple of years of his career at Team Penske. So we'll have to see. Let's maybe move on to the Indy 500 test. As you mentioned, we had 2 days on track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in the Oval last week. We had all 32 cars that are currently confirmed for the 500, and at least on Wednesday, Elio did not compete on Thursday due to his late crash Wednesday afternoon that was caused by some interesting track conditions that I think officials at IMS are still working to hash out, that involved the application of a sealant that they had put down on the track, both on the track and on the pit lane and warm up and cool down lanes last fall. And for whatever reason, partially maybe because of lack of running in those warm up and cool down lanes over the last couple months, while we'd had cars on track doing testing and two-seater rides and other various things on the oval, you hadn't had really virtually any running in those warm up and cool down lanes. And so we had 3 spins, 2 of which ended up in accidents for guys on Wednesday, and at one point put into question whether we would even test at all on Thursday. Weather also became a factor, and we ultimately were able to run for 4 hours on Thursday afternoon. But it was good to see cars back out on the oval. I know we can't always make a ton and probably shouldn't make a ton of testing times that come out of there, but obviously it's always better anytime you're on track to be more closer to the front than to the back. What did you guys take from, and how would you characterize how your 2 days of 500 testing went last week before we get into Indy 500 practice on May 17th?
I thought our test went okay. I think, as I mentioned right at the start, nothing to, jump up and down about and be like absolutely buzzing over. But in the same breath, equally the other side, nothing that would make you feel, wildly concerned. I thought the test, we honestly were just trying to, probably like everybody, dot the I's and cross the T's. And, for me anyway, it's the first time that I've driven, the 45 Hy-Vee Honda on a at Indy, and it takes a little getting used to. The balance of the car in general is taking me a second to get used to. The only good thing is, in this moment, obviously we do lead on Graham quite a lot because he does have the experience of driving the car, and he knows when the car's where it should be and where it shouldn't. And I don't think anyone was super happy with their car. So I mean, I actually felt like we made some good progress through the test. I can't even actually remember where we finished, in the timing sheets, but I kind of felt like we had a mid-pack kind of car, to be honest. So work to do, obviously, and probably quite a lot of it to do. Didn't get into any qualifying runs or you know, anything like that. So I think that'll be also interesting when, you know, when we come back in May. But I was overall more or less happy with how we left, but also acknowledging there is work to do. And again, you know, you look at the cars that were quick, and it's the same cars that we've been talking about all episode, really. So no, nothing shocking there, I don't think. I actually jumped on the, I'll ask the team to radio Graham, because actually after the very first run, even after I've installed laps, I said, hey, do you think the warm-up or the diesel, you know, or acceleration lane, you know, feels kind of slick to me on the inside of turn one, two, actually, and in three and four. And he said, yeah, he thought so too. So it was actually something that I feel like we were quite aware of, and that we just weren't pushing the exit as hard, you know, perhaps as what some people were. But it's certainly not something you want to see happen, because I would say, well, the three incidents we had are from people who've won the Indy 500. So, you know, they're not, I don't know if you can have more experience at the speedway than Elio Castroneves, you know, in all fairness. And, you know, the fact that that happened to someone like him just shows how swiftly it was, but also that there was certainly a need to try and fix part of the grip in the warm-up lane. And, you know, no doubt that'll be on everyone's mind as we come back. And, you know, hopefully these things just start to get a bit more rubbered in. I know it's been repaved, right? So, you know, these things sometimes can take a second, but ultimately I think everyone was just happy to finally be back in, you know, not super speedway mode, but getting ready for the Indy 500. You know, it's the biggest race of the year. It's the one that we all dream about winning, you know. And when I listened to when you were talking about Joseph and, you know, his desire to win Indy 500, I'm like, yeah, you know, no doubt he does, but also we all do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's not exclusive to one driver wanting to win it more or win it less. It is literally what drives our whole season, and working hard for race day on the Indy 500. So, you know, obviously I'm optimistic and hopeful that we'll make the appropriate changes so that we can put ourselves in a good position to do it. But yeah, mate, I thought it was just, if nothing else, it was just fun to be back on the speedway.
I wonder, and I posed this question to some folks when we were there, because it was around the same time frame as last year, and I was not covering the series in 2019, but I think I remember that open test again fell in April. And I wonder, and maybe it doesn't really make a difference to you guys, maybe it's actually helpful to have it earlier in the year so that the folks that are banging on those 500 super speedway cars have some more time to make the changes that they want to make. But I wonder, when we think about and talk about the fact that the conditions that we were dealing with in April, where like Wednesday morning there was a lot of questions on whether it was even going to be warm enough to start on track running on time just because of the temperatures, and wondering, you know, how really applicable the temperatures that we saw, you know, Wednesday and Thursday afternoon were going to be once it comes down to May 29th, when we're all concerned about race day. I wonder if there would ever be any way for IMS in the series to move that test, say, to Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday of the week of the GMR Grand Prix, where, you know, maybe everyone's just in that isn't already located in Indianapolis is there for a couple days longer. But it's at a time in the schedule where you guys are expecting to, you know, be in and around Indianapolis pretty soon anyways. and it's a time where it's a little bit later into the year. You're maybe a little less likely to have these annoying spring showers that we seem like we often have in April. Maybe temperatures in the afternoon are a little bit warmer, or at least are more likely to be so. And ultimately, maybe conditions that you're testing in and, you know, putting in this, you know, close to double digit hours of time on track to prepare for, maybe that work is maybe a little bit more directly applicable to the conditions that you'll see in qualifying and ultimately on race day. Any thoughts that you, whether, you know, whether that's come to mind to you ever, or whether you think that might be helpful or maybe even and less so if it were to be brought to teams?
Definitely was on my mind when it was raining and we wanted to go out on track. Man, I don't know. I don't know what the right solution is there, because trying to predict the weather in Indiana, I feel like it's just impossible.
That's very true.
You know, we go one week, it's, you know, snows on the ground, and later the same week, it's like 80 degrees, you know, with every bit in the middle, you know, covered as well. So I don't know. I felt like, oh yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the right answer to it is, because I've actually done the Indy 500 when it feels like it's been like a record temperature of like 90 plus, and then I think last year's 500 actually was low 60s, high 50s maybe.
Yeah.
So it's just it's hard, you know, trying to predict the weather. And I think in my experience, even like the 2 weeks across, you know, when you're just in 500 mode in terms of practice, qualifying weekend and the race, the weather can shift, you know, quite a lot there as well. So I think if you're able to move the test, there's a lot of advantages to it, in the sense of conditions might be similar. Disadvantage obviously is that's already quite a long month. So to make it longer for some people might even be more difficult. So lots of thoughts, but I don't know what I would change in practicality actually in the end. It's just a tough one. And you know, for example, we've had, you know, I think it was raining this morning, or it was drizzly if it wasn't, you know, and the sun's out now but it's kind of on the cooler side again. So I don't know, it's just that time of year really is very tough, especially tough in Indiana, because, you know, the winter seems to be extending more into the year, and then obviously getting those spring showers like you mentioned, and you know, really doesn't make a big difference until you want to be driving, and then suddenly it's like, oh god, the weather. But what was really weird about the test last week, especially Thursday, you're looking on the radar and I was even confused why it was even raining, you know. It just seemed like we were in a cloud, you know. It was just like this little bit of mist, and with the temperature not being there, and it, you know, things like that, it just took a long time for the track to dry as well. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
I think maybe 1 if not 2 hours there, like mid to late Thursday morning, we weren't able to get the dryers on the track, because as you mentioned, yeah, it wasn't raining, but it also, you know, there was some, you know, weird misting or even just some sort of like fog that just kind of felt like it just like sat on IMS for an hour to 90 minutes or so. And I'm sure that frustrated the workers that were trying to get that track ready, because in one vein too, they weren't able to get the final reading on the work that they had done overnight on the warm up and cool down lanes, in terms of trying to put some rubber down and give those sections a little bit more traction until they were all dry. So they weren't able to know until they got that track completely dry to be certain that we were going to be able to go testing. You know, because if those readings hadn't come back, you know, if they'd come back as if there'd been virtually no work done, then I'm not sure if we would have been able to hold testing, just knowing that there was that danger. Yes, it only happened to, you know, three of the hundreds of times that drivers came off of pit lane, but when you see how close You know, if you watch some of those onboards between how close Marcus Ericsson was to some pretty serious incidents that he escaped multiple times, I think once with Alex and once with Elio, and how close Colton and Will's cars were to touching ultimately, that forced Colton to make a jerk on the wheel and lose control and end up in the wall. Those things could have been a lot worse and were not things that you were wanting to even put up to chance. But ultimately glad we got some testing in. And I think wherever that test ultimately falls on the calendar, you really start to get thinking about and talking about and writing about the 500, which is ultimately a great thing. One thing that came through my inbox today regarding the 500, and it's it will be public knowledge once this podcast goes up, so I guess we can talk about it here. A little bit of change to the qualifying format for this year's 500. A lot of this is, I think, done under the assumption that we will only have 33 cars in the race, which I do think is or 33 cars in the field, 33 cars vying for 33 spots, which at this point, from what I know, is, I think, a pretty fair assumption. So we, of course, then won't have any sort of a last chance qualifier session unless some of that changes. So it's under the assumption that we're at 33 cars, IMS and IndyCar have added a second qualifying step in order to set up the first four rows in the field. So we would go through on Saturday with your typical qualifying day for from noon to 5:50, where every car gets at least one attempt. You go through the field with the randomized order that was selected in a drawing Friday night, and then cars can go into either the priority lane or the typical lane, depending on if you want to give up your time or just simply try to go faster on Saturday. If we're at 33 cars, spots 13 through 33 are locked in. After Saturday, we go into a top 12 qualifying format on Sunday afternoon, starting at 4 o'clock, where each of those fastest 12 cars in order of 12th fastest to fastest on Saturday get one run to try and make the fastest six, that then will additionally make one more attempt in what's being called the Firestone Fast Six, starting at 5:10 on Sunday afternoon. And ultimately that fast six session will decide who is the pole sitter for the 106th running of the Indianapolis 500 and who is starting in the first two rows of the race on May 29th. So a little bit of change. We also have the return of Monday practice. We're no longer having, at least for the time being this year, any sort of post-qualifying practice on the day of qualifying. So we'll have a two-hour session from noon to 2 on Monday afternoon for the full field of 33. And then the final time that cars will be on track ahead of the 500 will be carb day on May 27th. So some changes to that. Ultimately, I know you want to be in that fast 12 and that fast 6 come late May. Any thoughts on you know, adding an additional step to try and put that, you know, slot in those fastest 12 cars into this year's race?
I like it. You know, I think if there's no bump day, you know, obviously it shifts a little bit of the focus off of that. You know, I think that's a way to keep it, you know, a bit more exciting maybe. Also gives some of the cars the opportunity to try and fight for it. You know, there's definitely been times where you could be, you know, P10, P11, and, you know, if you don't have to pull your time, you might not go out again, because at that point, if you don't think you can make the step, it's not worth the risk. But, you know, to open up into the top 12, I think it's cool. You know, and I love to see the Speedway and the series, you know, experiment with new procedures, new qualifying formats, just to see what works, you know, what works, what doesn't work. And, you know, at the end of the day, worst case scenario, you can always just go back to what has worked traditionally. So, I mean, I like the idea of that. Obviously, I'm hopeful that we're going to be one of the cars in the top 12 and the top six, so we get to do, you know, several qualifying runs. But I like it. My initial feeling on it is a positive one.
Yeah, I think it'll be, I mean, it'll be even better under the, you know, hope that next year and years beyond we can have the last chance qualifier. I think if you have, you know, three sessions that have a lot riding on them, I think it's a great thing for the series and also for the fan base. Obviously, it's a bummer that, assuming that we don't have 33 cars, that outside of a test or a practice or a warm up, we don't have any action that Sunday until 4 o'clock. It makes for a pretty short day, and as I know from the viewpoint of some fans, is a little tough to, especially if they're traveling from a long ways away, to justify coming up here on a Sunday when they're only going to have 2 hours of on-track action, when they're used to, you know, multiple warm-ups and the last chance qualifier and the fast nine and a practice all jammed into a single day. So I can understand some frustration around that, but I think ultimately I like this format. I like that there's you're not just assuming that the fastest car from Saturday is then going to be the fastest car on Sunday because they only have to replicate it one more time. You got to replicate it two more times, and gives a chance for some more variability and some more excitement. And when you're talking about qualifying for the 500, that potentially has some of the most excitement that we see in the race calendar all year, I think that's definitely never a bad thing. So, well, let's get to some Twitter questions here from fans. Some of these we have already kind of addressed a little bit, so I will skip over them and apologize if but know that if you don't hear yours, then it probably means that it's a topic that we already discussed early on in podcast. So this first one comes from OWR Online, asking Jack, do you think you can beat Graham to a victory this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think Graham's had a better start to the season than we have. Maybe a little less change for him. So he kind of knows what he's driving, you know, in a team and all them things. But, you know, when I came to RLL, one of the first things that Bobby, you know, took off the table that Graham would get any preferential treatment just because he's his son or anything like that. And I didn't even have to ask, you know, they offered that. And, you know, talking to Graham, you know, he doesn't want a teammate who's just going to, you know, fall in line or whatever. So, I think that, you know, the desire between all of us to be the best team car, you know, is very strong. And obviously I'm believing myself that we can be that. So, I would be really happy that, you know, we got the first win for the team this season. And then, you know, he got the second one, but, yeah, I certainly have confidence that, you know, we can come and try and be the best team car and, you know, compete for wins against everybody. And, you know, I've never got too fixated on, you know, we want to beat just one guy. Ultimately, we go into the track to try and win the race. So, never just fixated on one person, but, you know, certainly believe that we can.
That probably kind of answers this question here from Alan, but I will ask it anyways, just for the sake of you answering it and further emphasizing your answer. He asks, Jack, can the car be improved this season from what we've seen, enough to be able to compete for wins, or do you think this is going to be a longer term project?
I mean, both. You know, I certainly didn't come to RLL, you know, with a short vision in mind. I came here, like I mentioned earlier, you know, very much as a long-term project, in a place I want to be for many, many years. That being said, you know, the season is not a write-off. It might not have gotten off to the best first three races, but I definitely believe that, you know, we have time to turn it around and, you know, and compete for wins. And I think that's what's so cool about the NTT IndyCar series are, you know, weekends that people win, they don't always have the fastest car, and sometimes they do, but ultimately we have to be ready to make the most of any opportunity that comes our way, whether it's on speed or whether it's just, you know, a little bit of good luck. So absolutely believe that there's time to turn it around. We know what, you know, some of our problems are, so we just got to put solutions in to fix them, obviously, but definitely staying, you know, optimistic, and I believe that we can get it done.
We'll skip over these questions from Derek about most surprising driver in terms of results. I feel like we touched on that earlier in the podcast. And go to, let's see, Jimmy B, who asks, who wins in Mario Kart, Jack or Graham Rahal?
Me.
Are you a big, do you play a whole lot of video games? Are you a big video game guy?
I don't, but I'm not even sure if Graham knows about video games in general, so I think that might be a little bit of an unfair one, but like I said to him, you know, him and his wife Courtney expecting their, you know, second child, so probably not too far away here soon. He's gonna have to figure out how to get on, you know, some of these video games, unless he wants his kids to beat him on them as well. But I mean, I've dabbled on Mario Kart a time or two, you know, so I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on that, but definitely confident I'd beat Graham at any video game, like, for sure.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I have not played that game in quite a long time, but that's and I don't profess to be a big video game guy per se. I don't own you know, a console or anything, but that's always a fun one to play at, you know, parties or things like that. And it was a favorite of mine growing up, certainly. And our final question of the week goes to Ben Lamb, who asks, I believe for both of us, but you can go ahead and go first. What are your favorite places to eat and hang out around Indianapolis?
Oh, favorite places to eat. I love Convivio. I love Napolese. I really like Tony's Steakhouse downtown. I mean, that's pretty top notch. Where else do I like? I like Chiba. I like Kona Jack's. Kind of, it really just depends what the mood is, honestly. Things I like, I love to go to Flicks Brewhouse. I love going to movies. I go to the Regal too. Sometimes you'll find me at the Indiana Gun Club. You know, so I kind of spread, like, I try and spread myself out as much as I can in terms of, you know, we have our favorite places for each type of food, you know, and sure, all the hobbies that I try and do, just to have like a little bit of my time. I'm always up for, you know, finding new places. Patachu, I know people are going to say that's basic, but frankly, the food is good. And, you know, I don't know where else you're going to go for a better brunch spot.
So, I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, probably nothing in there that has really shocked or wowed anybody, but it really depends on, like, that has to be like a, if you want to go for pizza, where are you going? But then I'm like, well, we're talking about carry out pizza or dine in pizza, you know, or like, you know, where's your favorite steak? Where's your favorite ice cream place? Mine's great you know, as an example. So it's a tough one to, answer because there's so many categories.
I would agree. Two of my favorites, both on Mass Ave, and I think they have some other locations, but these are just the closest one to where my wife and I live, just on the north side of downtown. The Eagle in Bakersfield.
Oh yeah.
Both really good ones. Both love going there a lot. And I've also, I know, I don't know how close it is to you, but I have, and or how often you get to downtown, but I will say, you know, it's not your, maybe your nicest dining experience, but I really appreciate what the Garage has done just kind of on the north side of Mass Avenue there, near toward the end, just having a food hall where you can go in and, you know, grab a beer or grab a cocktail or your favorite beverage and kind of have a run of the place of all these different kind of cuisines that are all packed into this one location. It's been fun going there every so often and just kind of, you know, working your way through, finding some favorites, and but also trying to, you know, try different things as much as I can as you go there. It's been a fun place to go to, and I think a really cool addition to Indy, something that Indy hasn't ever really had, and I think, you know, a nice large gathering place that's both inside and outside, I think has been a really cool addition to the series. Beyond that, you know, I'm trying to think, honestly, my wife and I haven't been able to probably do nearly as much exploring in terms of eating out as I think we would have liked to. We moved here just right before the start of the pandemic, and then When you add as busy as my work schedule is, and you add a baby into the mix over the last 4 months and getting ready for him before that hasn't allowed for a multitude of date nights. But I was jotting down some of the places that you mentioned when you were listing yours, and we'll add them to the list on some places to try when we can find some breaks in the schedule, maybe after we get past the 500.
Do you like seafood?
I do like seafood, yes.
I quite like salt en masse. That's quite good as well. That's on your area.
Okay,
that's
yes.
That's quite good.
That is a place that is on my radar. I hadn't looked into it enough to know like kind of what was on the menu and you know what some of their special things were, but that is definitely places that I'd heard a couple recommendations from. So getting another one, I'll make sure that we add that to the list here sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that should wrap it up for us. And I guess before we wrap it up, I'll just quick minute or two for folks that are tuning in this weekend to the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama. I think that's something close to the name of the race at Barber Motorsports Park on Sunday afternoon. What are one or two things that folks need to know about that track from a driver and just from a general fan's standpoint as you approach this weekend?
Oh, Barber's amazing. You know, it's incredible road circuit. It's a beautiful setting. And, you know, as you drive up to it, it basically just feels like you're driving into a forest and you get into the middle. And then there's this incredible racetrack. There's some really good elevation change. One of the things that's cool about Barber, I think the strategy is going to be probably the most open that we've seen strategies be so far this year. I feel like St. Pete and Long Beach was kind of narrow on pit windows. I think Barber is going to be a bit more open than that. And honestly, after that, I think it's a track that a lot of people really enjoy. You know, it's a real fun driving experience there. The museum is awesome. I haven't been since they put up or expanded it, but I've been a couple of times. And, dude, just everything about Barber is a fun weekend. Hopefully the weather stays good, because I've been there when it's wet and it's, you know, forests are great, but when it's raining, they kind of turn into being a bit muddy. But yeah, Barber's a really fun place to be, and honestly, just excited that we're going to get back into, you know, some road circuits here as well. So yeah, I think it's one that everyone is excited about going back to Barber.
I agree. Yeah, hopefully we're not dealing with the washout type of weekend. I don't remember if it was 2018 or 2019 that we had, where they actually had to race on Monday to finish up the weekend because the weekend had gotten so much rain.
Oh yeah.
But I think
that
I
might
checked
have been 18.
Yeah, that sounds right. But it looks like pretty good forecast. I think dry skies, and obviously that's pretty important for a track that I know really depends a lot on folks that love to camp there. But I know from going my first time last year, was really cool track to just drive in, and you're just like, you're surrounded on both sides by folks that have, you know, camp spots all around the track, and are either, you know, camped out at just for the day, kind of have their spot where they want to sit and watch the on-track action from, or folks that are actually there for the whole weekend. And I think that type of atmosphere is always really cool, whether it's there or Mid-Ohio or Road America, or some other places on the calendar. So excited to get back there. Excited to, you know, I actually have also not been in the museum. So hope to maybe try to sneak in there. I would suggest, if you're going, especially if it's your first time, to try and do that if you have not already. It's a pretty world renowned place for that track. And it's part of what makes it really special. So there you have it. A quick rundown on schedule this week. We've got practice at 4 p.m. on Friday. Practice number two at 10 a.m. before qualifying at 1. And then we have the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. Hope you guys get a chance to tune in if you are not on the grounds just outside Birmingham. And if you are there and see Jack or I walking around, be sure to give a wave. Always love to interact with folks who get a chance to listen to the podcast. Thanks for those of you that submitted questions this week. We hope to get more of those and love to interact with you guys more. If there's anything that you guys would love to see more of on the podcast, whether it's a segment or any other ideas, please send them our way. And we look forward to having more of these episodes for you guys here in the near future. So for Jack Harvey, I'm Nathan Brown. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of IndyCar Weekly.